Well, I'm in the home of Paddy Casey, the 21st of May, the year 2000. Are we going to have a little chat about rowing and about boxing and about wrestling and about everything else? Paddy is the last of the Casey brothers, and I'm delighted and thrilled and honoured that he had me into his home. Tell us about your mum and dad. They were great oarsmen and women. Talk to us about them, Paddy.
Well, my dad was born in a place called Lahan, between halfway between Sneeman and the Black Shop. I'd say that'd be about 6 miles from Sneeman. My mother was born in where we were born. You can see it from here. Bullock. That's where all the family was born. The twin, the 7 boys and 3 girls. And our livelihood was all fishing. You know, the land is a bit rough and wild, you know. There isn't too much good land around Sneeman. But the fishing was a big thing. It was sound fishing.
Did your mother and father come from a big family, Paddy, themselves?
Oh, my father. I think there was about 8 in his family. Between the girls and boys. On my mother's side, there were 6.
And they had a great sporting background themselves, Paddy. What do you remember they're talking about sport, their own sporting background?
Oh, the sport that they followed up at that time was all rowing, boat racing. That was the big, there were no engines in those days. And that's why there were 6 great horsemen. They had to row all the time, you know. But where they lived in Bullock is 2 miles by water to Sneeman Pier. And to go around by land, you're going over the mountain to about 6 miles, 7 miles. So they come by boat all the time. And that's why they were so good at the rowing. You know, it's just left the cradle.
And was your father, was he a boxer, Paddy? Somebody told me he was a bare knuckle boxer.
He was what you call a bouncer. That's what we call John L. Sullivan. That's how he started. And in America, John L. Sullivan was going to a pub and he'd challenge any man in the house. And Mike Casey was in the pub and he said it. He said, I'll take you up. The old man is.
Yes.
And he wasn't good enough for General Sullivan.
Yes.
But the story is, Mike, how did you get on with General Sullivan? He was a holy terrorist, you know.
Yes, yes.
He never said that General Sullivan was better than him, or that he was better.
Right, yes.
But the answer was to us, the family, and not everyone. Well, he was a holy terrorist.
And Paddy, did your mum and dad then immigrate to America? And did they meet there, or did they get married and immigrate?
They never met in America. They went around about the same time. I think it was back in the early 20s. My father went to America and my mother. And they never met in America until I came back here. I come back here to Ireland, 1903, 1904. They met here and I got married here.
And did they work with the Vanderbilts then? Did I read that somewhere?
Yeah. That was a big job, you know. It was, I say it, in those days, work wasn't as good as what it is nowadays in any country, but they got on pretty good.
When they came back, then they married, Paddy, and then the family were born. Talk to me about the names of you.
When they came back, no road, no way to get in. They were all born inside down below, and there were no doctors. You know, today they have medical hubs, got everything advanced, but the babies to be born. But there was no doctor, and not even a nurse.
Now, Paddy, talk to me about the name of your own family, name of the children that were in your family then.
Well, my own family. Well, my family. When I married 19...
No, sorry, Paddy, about your brothers and sisters, their names.
Yeah. Well, they're... You mean that...
Their names, Paddy.
Oh, yes, those are... three girls.
That's what
Margaret, the eldest girl, yeah. And Josie, Josephine, and Kitty. Kitty is the youngest.
How many
of them
are alive now?
There are right, one.
Which one of them?
Josie. She's in London.
And the boys
then? Yeah, that's that. Well, all the boys are my brothers, do you mean?
Yes.
Well, they're all dead now except me. I'm the only one living now.
Their names in for me, can you?
The name now is Steve, Jack, Jim, Mick, Tom, Dan.
It must have been very difficult for your mother and father, Paddy, raising a family like that. It must have been tough times, was it? What are your memories of the youth now, growing up in Bullock?
No, but the times that in those days, it was they were better than they are now. They had everything we had, you know, the food, fresh fish, fresh salmon, our own sheep. We didn't have to go to no butcher, and our own cattle, but we killed all our own, and have a deep freeze, you know, and be there with all beams in the old house. We hang up that. If we kill your own pig, then you will eat something in. You don't get that today. Oh no, then it's fed the same, you know. The way they feed these animals today, is all artificial manure and the land, and the meat is not the same.
So there were happy times, Paddy, growing up, weren't there?
Yes, great times. They didn't have the money like they have now. But I think they were more happier in life, you know.
So, I would presume that you started your sporting career then in rowing. Talk to us how sport came into your young lives then, Paddy.
Well, as far as rowing went, we couldn't come to school without a boat. And you know how you were then. Start school about 8 years of age in the old days. And had to row all the time, 2 miles. You can see the old ruin down here.
Right.
And it was a good exercise for a good experience. And that's why we were such great oarsmen. And it was the same with my mother's family, my father's family. There were no engines in the boat, there was this. If we didn't row the boat, she won't go.
As a matter of interest, did any of the Caseys think of turning to the Gaelic football, Paddy, will you tell me? Were you interested in football?
There were several occasions that I went to Steve and Jim and Tom,
right.
And myself.
Yeah.
But we were so interested in the rowing, we took it so serious. Otherwise, we'd be in the football business, you know.
No.
So you couldn't make the grade for trying to do one against the other. You know.
So then, Paddy, when did you start competitive rowing? Talk to me about your career then.
I was about 15 years of age when I had my first professional race. She was a year older, a year and 2 months older. Then there's Jack and then there's Jim. Tom was only about 14. And, at that time, we were there's a course here in this name, a mile and a quarter course. No crew ever did it. That's against the stopwatch. They all tried it since. The only crew that came near it were my own 2 sons and Jack's 2 sons and Steve's 2 sons. Steve's 2 sons came out of America in 1970.
What were those boys' names now, the sons of the three brothers? What were their names, just for the record, Paddy?
My sons,
yeah.
Steve and Patrick. I had 2 boys and 3 girls.
What were the girls' names?
Bernadette, Amelda, and Pat. Patricia.
So, did you started moving out then, taking part in regattas, I presume? Talk to me about that side of it, Paddy.
Well, mostly all our regattas and boulders were at Bantry, Castletown. Skibbereen, Killarney, Castlebean, Port McGee, Valencia, Walter Lake. All, well, the races, the big races, were at Castletown and Bantry, the Skibbereen. You didn't get that good cruise down here as good in the competition and the 4 hour gig, the 4 hour sweep. They didn't have cruise good enough.
So how did you fare in those races, Paddy? Were you being beaten? Did you win them all?
We won the whole thing. Every race we went in for.
Never lost.
We had an advantage over all the crews. The reason we had an advantage was all one family. You know, the teamwork was good then. But if we went out for a competitive race, like in England, on a couple of occasions, my brother Mick didn't turn up. So we picked the best man in the club, the A Strong Club. The three brothers with one of the club best oarsmen. We could never do the same as good as when we had the four brothers in the boat. The style was different.
No, Pat, the Salter Cup. I'm a Killarney man myself, and when the regatta comes up in Killarney, everyone talks about the Caseys winning the Salter Cup. Tell us about that.
That cup was presented by the Salters from Oxford, London, 1924. And the only crew that had won it before we got our first go at it was a crew from Bantry, the Whitty Islands. They won it in 1925. That's in the Killarney book. The book is there. And when we started, it was 1931, 32, 33. So to win the cup to be your own, you had to win it 3 years succession. If we win it two years, and lose the third year, we couldn't keep the cup.
So where's the cup today, Pat?
Cup in London. In my private home in London. Yeah. And that cup, they offered us £60 for it. 1933. The committee in Killarney. Yeah. So I said to him, we didn't win it to sell it. But the cup today is about 4,200. And that cup, they offered us 60 quid for it. It's a pure silver. Stamped, you know.
So, what were the names of the brothers that won that cup now?
Steve, Casey, Jim Casey, Tom Casey, Paddy Casey, and the Cox for Dan Casey. My brothers.
Now, Paddy, I do know that he went very near being chosen to row for Ireland in the Olympics.
Oh, we would be only for, we made, the big mistake we made that time was Steve and I wrestled professional. That was 1936. And we'd beaten the crew that we beat on three occasions when we were disqualified on account of rowing and accepting money. In the amateur sport, that is not allowed. And they disqualified us. We were at the A Strong Club. The secretary of the A Strong Club says, you won't be allowed to race in Berlin, 1936, in Germany.
Yeah.
But we'd have really won. It would be a sure thing, won by the gold medal.
How many gold medals do you think you were capable of winning in those Olympics, Paddy? Would you get hazard a guess?
At that time, we were making up a crew for the eight. There were seven brothers and one man, one other man. There was a two-hour. There was a four-hour. And there was a sculling race. So we reckon we'd have won four gold medals in Berlin that year.
Who would the eight men have been, as a matter of interest, to make up the crew?
The eight men was a fellow from... He was living in England. He was from Cassavine. His name was Murphy, Jim Murphy, great horseman. And we used to come out with us in London and the A Strong Club when we were knitting. He was just as good as we were. I'd draw with us, you know. And then we had the Seven Brothers.
And now, Steve, then, of course, did somebody, he went on, and did he win the World Championship in sculling? Or did he row against the world champion?
Oh, he rowed against the Cadman. This is just Charles Rowan Boston. And he beat him. The Thrym beat Cadman. But Steve put a challenge out for a four-hour sweep. Sliding seats. And nobody accepted it. But that, when the challenge was put out, but this for a Cadman, he was New England champion in America. Very great scholar. And he took him up. And he said he'd put down $10,000 if any of the cases. He had to beat the three brothers, and the three of them beat him.
Who were the three brothers now that beat him again?
Steve, Jim and Tom. Jim and Tom. Tom was the fastest scholar of the three brothers. Steve was a bit on the heavy side for, you know, a man of 16 and a half stone. He was a bit on the heavy side on at the time. But Tom was very fast anyway. Tom was a lot younger.
Have you any idea, Paddy, roughly how many races did you eat have rode in, roughly, and how many you'd have won? Would you talk about 100?
Oh, gee, that'd be more than that. That'd be... Yeah, you're taking all the races we had here. In England now, number one, we rode 38 races, and then we lost one. I think we won every one, all over London, England, and in Ireland here. It was the same all around all the coast. You see, all races were not confined to Kerry, like the same boat crews I have now.
I suppose I should put it here another way. How many times can you remember being beaten?
Never been beaten.
That's
never been beaten.
You see, train a lot then for the rowing, Paddy. In what way? What type of training would you do? How often?
The training. Every time we went out, we had a course with a stopwatch. And you do that course, you're running against the clock. That's where the training comes in. And you say, they did it, so you do the course in 7 minutes, 10 seconds, 7 minutes, 9 seconds. Well, it might be a second or two or three different at times. But the record time, we've never done since 1920, the mid-20s. We've never done since by any crew. And the only crew that came near that is my own two sons and my brother Jack's two sons and Steve's two sons that came out of America. They were the only ones ever, but they didn't beat do the time that we did.
Where was that race held now? Did she set that record time?
Here the name. There's the midfield. You know, Warren Ravenspurs and Gannis Island. Well, that's where the course is.
Paddy, looking back now to your rowing career, what do you think was your greatest achievement in the rowing? What was your biggest win, would you think?
Well, the biggest winner would be outside England and the fours and then America. And the biggest in Ireland was against the Whitty crew. Whitty Island. There was two brothers in that crew. One of them had a hair lip. He was a stroke horn and a Whitty crew. And there was a fellow by the name of Moore. There was three brothers on a Moore. Moore was 16 stone. They were number three in the boat. But they were a great crew. And the next best crew, this time in the fixed seas now, but the man is from Arcast. You know, Arcast is near Port McGee. They were all one family. And gee, they were really good.
How many of them were in the family? Do you remember their names?
The Mahoneys. Well, one of them was still doing boat building. He was one of the crew, Johnny Mahoney. I didn't know the other boy's first name, you know, their first names, but I knew them all. Meet him. And they were not as big as Jim or Steve now. for Tom, but in around about 13 stone, I suppose, or 12 and a half.
Had he, in the line of socialising then, when you were in your prime, drinking and out late, and eating and diet and things like that, how conscious were you of that?
You're smiling.
That the only time that we celebrate, and it was good for you, like I do, fellas, that have a pint before the race. I'll win all race when you take one pint of Guinness. It'll come in last. It'll be goes sound inside in your stomach. It's like drinking a pint of milk. It doesn't like buttermilk.
Would you celebrate after winning races?
We'd always have a drink. I'd drink one or two pints of Guinness, no more. Maybe three if I don't. But you relax then. That's good for you.
There's an awful lot of talk today, no, Paddy, about diet, about watching what you eat and what you shouldn't eat. Were all the brothers conscious of that?
No, the diet is it's crazy. People tell you you have to eat this and you have to eat that. You eat what you feel like, you know. We never went for a special. Fish was mostly the big diet. You know, we were fishing all the time. But fish is very good for you, especially the salmon. But a good bit of roast beef and a roast lamb. Then there's you were eating different lamb and different meat, you know.
What was your last race then together, all the brothers, Paddy? Can you remember it? Was it a bit of an occasion?
Last race. You see now with us. 1937, the four brothers. That's a little London and here the Bantry's and Castletown. Killarney, of course, Killarney, we rode pretty late, Killarney, back in 1933, when we won the South Cup. And then after that, we went streaming down to Tainley, you see. So there was no more rowing. There was only the brothers that were left here, then Jack and Dan and Jim. The three brothers, you know, they didn't have a full crew, but they did row in a tour race.
Just getting back to your mother, Latimer Simmel again, Paddy, somebody told me that her father was a great man. He was known as Johnny Mountain.
Johnny Mountain was... They claimed that Johnny Mountain was better than the Grapher. The Grapher now was my mother's brother, Grapher Mountain. Powerful. He used to walk from here, Sneem, to Watford, over the mountain, and his race was one man in the boat. A sculling race, they call it, you know, the paddle race. Nobody could touch him. But imagine walking over the mountain. There was no transport. Over the mountain and win the race. Yeah. He was the fella that they say was with him, Johnny Mountain. That's my mother's father now. Yeah. He was a stonemason, Johnny Mountain.
Yeah.
Killarney course. And the Killarney oarsmen, they won't be good enough in for the final. They'll be too tired. But we never went out for a race without doing the course before we raced. If the course is 5 miles long, if it's 2 miles or 4 miles, we went out and did the course. And we were better, a lot better, after doing that and do a few good spurts and put up a little bit of sweat. And coming in there, they're all calling out, "Get ready, the race is on." Then you see, you're warmed up. But you were sitting there for a half an hour inside the boat and doing nothing. That's not good for you.
Looking back now, Paddy, at your great rowing career, did you realise how good you were that time, or did you just take it as a matter of your life?
We didn't realise, no. If we, honestly, if we did realise, we'd have got records. We'd break all records, you know. We didn't realise like it. Took no notice. Well, Latimer's in the old man. He never said how good we were, sir. He'd been inside the pub having a pint and we'd be out training. And the rest he might be inside having thrown down one.
And when you'd come home then to Malacca with the trophies or the cups or whatever you'd win, would your mother and father, what would they say about to you?
Well, that'd be a good shake hands. But the old man had a way about him. He was always better than us. No matter how good we were. So we knew there was no good nagging with him. Yeah. And Steve was ours, well, you're a better man than any of us, your sons. Jesus Christ, man, didn't I prove it, he said. And we were coming from Killarney. We were coming from Killarney one day when Danny was wrestling Killarney.
Dan O'Mahony?
Yeah, and his father was there. Danny's father was about 6'2", 6'4". And we were coming up to Lady's View, and it was the curate that was here, his name, a priest, Father Murphy, and he was a Killarney man. He was stationed here, his name, and he used to run the Killarney Lakes, a good oarsman. We came up to Lady's View, the conversation anyway, came up, and I said, Danny Mahoney's, how would my case go against Danny Mahoney? In the car, you know. And Steve says, I'd say Danny's father had too much experience. Turn the car around, he says, I'm going to Killarney and I'll take him on, he says. Yeah, of course, he had a good foot ring, you know. Poor pilot, he liked it to drop a drink in.
Yeah.
Turn the car around. Well, we never gave in. We kept saying to him that Daniel's father had more experience. He'd have probably beat Daniel's father. He was very, very powerful, the old man.
But your mother, Latimer, must have been very proud of you too.
She was really proud. And she'd always have a special meal for us, and we were waiting for a big contest, you know. But we didn't expect it, but we got it. She was really good. So the grub was very good all the time.
Paddy, we'll turn to the wrestling. Come here, will you tell me, how did wrestling come into the family? Where did it start? Did it start at home? Did it start at home? Because there's no tradition of wrestling in Kerry as such.
No wrestling at all. I've no dream about wrestling, Steve. Steve went to London before 1933, after Killarney, Regatta, the South of the Cup. And he was there for a while in a hotel called the Bedford Hotel in Tatton Court Road. One night he married my sister after, her name was McCauley. And he was passing along going to the gymnasium. The gymnasium was Russell Square. While he was going, I had another guy with him called Hard Langus from Doncaster. He was the best in the world, as old for it, wrestler. Just Hard Langus. There's a book about him, too. I have it there. Nobody ever could touch him, in that 20 star man. And it happened that when I were passing the Bedford Hotel, the Stephen threw out a troublemaker. And instead of throwing him outside the door, he threw him over the taxi. The taxi is parked outside the door, you see, the hotel. You get a line of taxis lined up, which they do in any business place, waiting for a job. But they didn't know Steve from Adam, but they went over and asked who he was and all this. They had a good chat with him and took him to the gym the following day. That's how it started. And I suppose he was only about 6 months when he had his first fight as a professional liker. But he didn't have a date, no, he didn't have a good fight. And he was matched with a fella called Bob Adams. He was billed as the Black Eagle. He was a colored. He was about 17 stone. Very big fella. I never seen professional wrestling until then. I see Steve wrestling him. And then he'd be painted. And I see this big black man up against Steve. And he don't want to Steve. Steve beat him. on the pipe phone out he gets. And he says to me, he's working for £2 a week in the hotel. He says, Paddy, he says, pipe phone, I got this. He says, for about 20 minutes, for a half an hour. So we all got going after dinner, after that, you know.
Yeah.
It was Andy Murray.
Were you all after immigrating at this stage, Paddy? Tell us, where were the brothers at this stage?
Well, there was, Jim didn't immigrate till about 1937. Mick was before that. Dan, around 1937. We didn't all go out. Steve was the first out there. And to Steve got myself and Tom and Jim. And Mick, he paid for the fare and took us over. But he joined the A Strong Club. The A Strong Club. He joined the club before over we went over. And he was at his own. And the club liked him. He was to row with the other crews. And he, because Steve said to the secretary of the club, I've six brothers in Ireland, he says, they're better than I am. She was, they weren't crazy about Steve, you know, Steve was so good. And we were just as good. So he says, I'm just as good as maybe better than I am, he says. Bring him over. That's how it started.
And then you got into the wrestling then yourself, Paddy. Talk to me then about your own wrestling career.
The wrestling, I've been amateur for about a year and a half before I went into professional wrestling. And I did pretty fair. Steve was amateur too for about a year. And the school was traveling all over Europe. And we were winning all our matches. And we turned pro in 1936 after the when we were refused permission to row on in Germany, the Olympic Games. We turned pro after that. Steve, I said.
Yeah.
And when Jim started in 1937 then, and Mick was a bit later. And that's how it started. To Steve, as I said before, there'd be none of us in the business, truly speaking. Only for Steve.
What, Paddy, you said you fought all over Europe. In what cities did you fight in? Did the brothers fight in?
You mean in the amateur?
Yeah.
When you know, they have the amateur contests. They have three amateur gymnasiums in London. And you go to them gymnasiums, and you go to the continent, the same. And if we join a club. One club, the secretary and the chairman was in charge of that club. He'll do all the bookings for it, send you over to the other countries. It's according to your ability. But if we're no good, he won't send an offer. But if we're good, he'll book straight away.
Can you recall the names of the people that you met yourself? You'd often read wrestlers' names there. They'd be very spectacular kind of names.
Number one was a fellow called Jack Sherry. He was from Alaska. 5 foot 11, 17 stone strict. And he had a pair of eyes. I said, it was as small as the top of my fingers. Small eyes, you know. But that would. And but he didn't know about wrestling. When we started, he used to beat Steve and I in about a couple of seconds. He'd tell you. But he would learn anything from us if we would learn all the time after him. And a lot of us would not train with him. He was too good. But if we have the master, your master, don't know more than you were a novice, you never learn. I said to Steve, how the hell did he beat me so quick? After about 5 or 6 months, it was a different story.
What other names do you recall, Paddy, that you met? Or that Steve met, even?
Well, the name of the wrestler, another great man was his name was Jarl Bigansky. He was a Russian. Another great fella, Mike Brindle. Oh, he was a Tiger. Hungarian. another great wrestler of New York. Won the gold medal in the amateurs, Wittenberg, light heavy. Do you go to watch it? To watch him, them bullets, when I get in the contest. The science, you know. And I said to Steve, geez, we have a lot to learn. I was learning the way he moves.
How many fights did you yourself in, Paddy, roughly?
I'd say I'd have about somewhere, maybe over a bit more altogether. See, you'd have a wrestling contest maybe every week.
And was there money in it at that time, Paddy?
No big money like there is now. But there was, put it this way, if you were undefeated, say, and you're not bumped off, your money goes up. But if you beat him, if I wrestle you tonight, sir, and you beat me, I can't claim it. But if I keep winning all the time, I have the flipping you then, and the promoters. Of course, if you're winning all the time, you're drawing the crowds, the box office. And that's why Steve was so good. Made a lot of money out of it.
Turning to Steve then, of course, Steve went on then and won the World Championship. Did he go to America then, Paddy?
He went to America in 1936. That's been his first time going to America. And his first show was a referee. He refereed the first match after going over. Paul Bowser was the promoter. He was a very big name, Paul Bowser. He was a great wrestler. But he was getting on the edge, and he was a promoter. And the Boston Arena. And because he had Steve in the contract then, Paul Bowser. He did to Steve good. Steve was delighted with him. He paid Steve big money. And that's how Steve started.
And he took on all comers then, didn't he?
Bowser was a very good promoter. He was he knew the wrestlers inside out. And he'd get an opponent for Steve. When he thinks Steve was right, he wouldn't put him in maybe all of a sudden with a fellow fast thing going over. Like the Lou Test that he beat for the world title. It was 1938, he put him on with him. But Test was champion all the time before that. But Danny Mahoney was beaten by a German. Dick Shaikert. He beat Daniel at 19. Daniel won the world title on Jim Lundus in 1935. And he held it for 1 year. And he was bumped up by Dick Shaikert, the German. He didn't last so long, but a year, that was the limit. And the German beat him.
Where was Daniel from?
Baldyhob, County Cork. It was a big family then. Yeah. He had a brother, he was an Ireland champion, and the weight rank, 56, the distance and over the bar. And Daniel was an Ireland champion, as a weight thrower. Daniel was very powerful. Daniel had more power than any wrestler Steve said he ever wrestled with his legs. And do you know what the name they gave him? The kicking mule. The old mule, you know, that was the old days. That was like a rock. When that old mule threw a kick, you got hit. But Daniel was the kicking mule.
Steve went on then, and he took on all comers, and he won the world title. Did you go to America to see him fighting, Paddy?
And?
Did you go to America to see him fighting?
What, did we go over? No. I never went over to see any of his matches in America. Of course, to see him all in London before he went over. But,
what were the name of the men he fought in? He fought some people from all over the world. Can you recall any of the names of those great wrestlers?
Well, he beat all the fellas. He beat Daniel Dick Shaikert and Stranger Lewis and several names that I can't recollect now, like, you know, the top men.
And then Paddy, he turned to boxing. Talk about his interest in boxing.
There was a fella that he'd there was a lot of controversy about a fighter and a wrestler. How would a wrestler go against a fighter? Well, I'll give you the story in that now, because I did it myself. The boxer with the gloves on and I with the bare hands. He had the chance, the fighter. But this fella that stayed beat was one of the best in America then. Steve was wrestling and he's boxing. But Steve told me that he can't stay with one right hook. And he said, Paddy, he says, I thought I was finished. And Steve would have one knee. He didn't go down the two knees, you know. And the fella came close to him then, the fighter. And that's why the fighter made the mistake. Steve took the two legs from under him. Leg dived him, you know. And so, well, he was in the front of his back then. And Steve blocked her. When you get in the clinch and the fighter with the gloves, you block him and you tie him up. He can't pull him out if in the rear arm, you know, both sides. And that's how Steve beat him. And I did it with a fellow in Bedlam, Manchester. Reggie Meehan, British heavyweight champion, a black man. He's boxing with the gloves.
So you faced him, you had no gloves, and he had gloves.
The gloves on. But we got hit in the clinch, and I left him put his two hands around him, his gloves. When he come in the clinch, you know, I slapped him like that. So his glove was blocked. His hair behind my arm, on both sides, and he couldn't pull him out. So I swung him around. And 2 days came off of the mat then. I got on top of him then. But I still held the two gloves there. But there was a big advantage. A good top fighter and about a third class wrestler will beat a top fighter. There's that advantage.
And Steve boxed, then he put on the gloves and he boxed the American champion.
Yeah, that's the American champion. And he put out a challenge then after that. It's there in the book.
You
beat him
anyway.
Yeah, it's there in the book. Right. And Jack Dempsey said, after Steve beat the solo.
Would that American champion, would he have been Warrentown?
What name?
Was it Warrentown?
Warrentown, I got it.
He beat him anyway, and then he put out a challenge.
Yeah. Well, you got one of the books, haven't you?
Yeah, I have one of the books, yeah.
Well, it's in that. This one, this one you were talking about. They put out a challenge then, and to Jack Dempsey says, after that, in my opinion, Jack Dempsey says that he'd beat Joe Lewis. Joe Lewis was a world champion then. You know, with Joe. Joe was. I said Joe was better than Cassius Clay on him. Very good fighters. But Joe never accepted the challenge. He knew more. He was pretty smart. Steve would have bumped him off anyway. Joe Lewis knew that.
Did he box many more fights in with the gloves?
No. He got no box. Nobody would take him on.
What about yourself? Did you box with the gloves, Paddy?
No, I didn't. Did a bit of sparring with the brother Tom and Tommy Farron, Lynn Harvey. That were Tommy Farron, the distance, Joe Lewis. He was a woodsman. But he was they were all friends, the same gym with us. The gym we signed in at Fitzroy Street, London, and the owner of the gym was a German. And he was middleweight champion of the world in his time. But he was an old man then, when we were training there. He was around the 80s, and He died about 87, right, in 89. He was 90, over 90. And all Bill signs that I started about him, he was very good. And all the great fighters, boxing was going out. Lynn Harvey. Lynn Harvey was one of the best in the world, I'd say. He won three titles, three different weights, middleweights, light heavy and heavy. Jack McAway, he was a Manchester man. Eddie Phillips, he won the middleweight, the light heavy and heavy. Tommy Fowles won the heavyweight. Great bit. So there was all the top fighters were going to that gymnasium. And the reason they were all go there, and the rest, the good wrestlers, because they were good. They never would go in, as I said, going out and slip off and go out and train with a fellow that knows nothing. Go for the fellow that can beat you, and you learn me all the time. How would he beat you?
So, Steve then, he didn't box anymore after that, but he retained his wrestling title then for...
Yes.
So, Paddy, getting back now to your own career again, you won the title, the British title in wrestling.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that.
I won the British title, the light heavy. Light heavy. 1937. Probably his name was Bob Cook. You mentioned that. Pretty good contest. Then after that, with the light heavy, the heavy, in Dublin at Tarka Park, I wrestled there for the Irish heavyweight. And the champion was Tug Wilson from Belfast.
What year was that then, Paddy?
1937. Well, he came down to Dublin, and I went up to Dublin. No, I came up from London, and the match was in Tarka Park, in the open air. And he wasn't really too hot, you know, enough mediocre wrestlers.
What were the rest of the brothers doing when this was going on? What were they involved in, Paddy?
Oh, you mean before they started wrestling?
Yeah.
Well, while they were here, for all fishing, you know. We'd fish lots of fishing, and when the salmon season starts, this is May, June, July, until about the middle of August, that's the salmon season. And fishing with the deep angling was different now, together. You fish for all different type of fish. But that was a hobby, that was our livelihood. What are you looking for? A pound a week, I think.
How many of you did? How many of the brothers were wrestling, Paddy? And where were they wrestling?
There was Mick, Steve, myself, that's three, Tom of the Boxers. Jim was very good. It was a toss-up between Jim and Steve. When he was a teenager, Jim was dynamite. Jim had a different style. Jim was a photo call. Jim practiced a lot in the big punch bag that the boxer uses, you know, with the forearm. And so we said, Jim is a fellow with that. He go down. And you're not allowed to hit a fellow with a clenched fist in the wrestling. But Jim was so quick, the referee wouldn't hardly see him doing it. Delbo as well. And he was a son of a bitch.
So, were the seven brothers wrestlers, Paddy?
They could do a little bit, but not public, for the public. Jack did quite a bit, but not professionally, you know. And Dan didn't. They were very good. That was the same as all the rest of the family. There was no difference between the seven of us and rowing. You know, one was as good as the other. says, what a competitor. I feel good for a good fine fellow one time to go today. And he had maybe he might get the flu and he wouldn't turn up for a gatcha. But there was another fellow we take them. He was just as good.
So he also did a bit of tug of war.
What's a tug of war? Well, that's a big field below here. Just about 400 or 500 yards. That's all we trained. A big pull in the three. And every man had to pull against one another. That's how they were picked. The pick of our team was between Cassavine and Kinmare. We picked, that was definitely a big rare to pick from. That was quite serious, you know, that had to be good. And of course we had Wildall Island, the name of Mick Sheehan. Wildall Island is in the single pull.
Where was Mick Sheehan from?
Cahill. And Tom Sheehan, his brother, was the anchor man. He was 17 stone,
yeah.
Tom Sheehan,
yeah.
6'4",
yeah.
Giant old man. And Mick was Mick. And Mick Barber off in his mouth when he was coaching. But he do this for the that means hold him. But to heave, he do that. So the other coach didn't know what we were doing. And the other coach was shouting all the time.
And did the seven of you pull together?
And?
Were the seven of you under one team?
The seven of us pulled it together in two or three cases. But we won the Munster Championship, there were six of us.
Where was that held, Paddy?
Kinmare. That was the Munster Championship. And there was a fella throwing the 50-60 there. His name was Ned Tobin, Tipperary. He was our Ireland champion at the 56. Over the bar of the distance. His photograph is there in the book. Steve. Ned Tobin. Oh, 6'3", 6'4". Great wrestler.
Did you ever think of going into the weight, throwing yourself and the discus and things?
That's serious now. No one was serious about it, but I'd say that Steve Tam did a little bit of it, and he was very good. But again, the wrongest were so serious at throwing that we didn't put an all boat near the sport. You know, the rowing. And that's why we were so good.
Paddy, coming back to the wrestling now, you might tell me the names of the holes and the throws. It's a different language in itself, isn't it? You know, you might go through what all those names, wrestling terms are.
Oh, you mean the different holes? Oh, that's as the fellow said, a wrestler I knew, he was a promoter. He knew about 100 holes, but he was no good, he could never operate them. So I'd say, if we've got a pit hold, you don't. But to be a good wrestler, you don't go for 100 holes or 50 holes, that is, like he says. I said, if we know about 4 or 5, I'd train for that. Well, my pet hole was, I could do it, but I couldn't do it now, like the toe hold. If I get you down, and you down all fours, and I get behind you, and I get your foot from the back in here now. This is what I do then. Well, I could break that. I did it. But if the fellow didn't tap the mat and say, I have enough, I'd break it. You can never get out of it. That was my pet hold. And stay with the Killady flipped the horse. He was taking him over his head, his shoulder.
Did he tell him at the Killady flip himself?
Well, the Killady flipped to be so full about it. It was a gimmick name they gave it. To ride the... Everyone says, he finished up the world champion and the final fall with a Killady flip. Well, I do the Killady flip and I don't say I do it. Sammy Steve. But not a good like, but... They gave it that name, as you can say, Killady flipping. Why did they call the Cardinal Flip?
What about injuries, Paddy? The whole lot of you, did you receive any serious injuries between the rowing and between the boxing and between the wrestling and the tug of war?
I've been there for the last one, wrestling. Well, here now, you can feel them.
Yeah.
Three ribs. Yeah. Two steam. The bone sticking out.
I can feel the bone sticking out there on your left-hand side, Paddy Casey.
I would want. 6 months could not sound my breath. You know what? That was very dangerous, too. But he'd done my knee down through my ribs when he couldn't tap. The force smashed the ribs.
Who was that fighter?
That's in the gymnasium. Was Steve. My own brother breaking my ribs.
Did he receive many injuries himself?
Oh, Steve did have quite a few. He had a few back injuries. But he was very lucky though. He survived. He got out of them.
Which one of you, Paddy, owned the bar in America that got involved? So talk to us about that.
Steve owned the bar in Boston. And it was called Crusher Casey Bar. That's the Boston. Up into the Boston Arena. And he was doing big business. And I was into his bar several times when I went over. And he made a... He didn't send the bar, he'd go in his... you know, do the... what do you call it? A mixed drink for the shake, when you shake the... You put that for the... Yeah, you know. And he put the two big hands up and the glass in the box and he just shake it. And they all went... I said, how much do you know about shaking the there's cocktails, that's it all, but he says, but I always said, I'll talk pretty good, for I'll be doing it. And he says, this is a drinking paddy, he says, the whole, Jesus, over the little boat, sir. I spoke up with about 80 or 100 sitting down in the bar.
Yeah.
And I said, Jesus, I said, that's an awful lot of races. I have not money, I said, to pay for that much. It didn't cost me a penny, but he said, this is the crowd. This is for my brother Paddy now. Everybody in the house is having a drink from Paddy.
Yeah.
Jesus, Sonny, they shook the hand off me. Congratulations, Paddy. You're a great man. You're the only man that ever get free drinks out. Yes, he did it. He was the man who was losing. It cost me nothing.
He was raided in one time, I think, and that he suffered an injury.
Oh, he was in the doctor in 1966, I think. Two corporals, three, that was now two, three. And the shattered mate is an Irish fellow. Do you know if I get his name now? The shattered mate was dead at the door there. And Steve got three bullets. And there were one of the bullets was still in his body that I couldn't get out when he died. And... he was about a year and a half in our hospital. He was very lucky.
When did you all retire then, Paddy? Did you all retire at different times, or did you all make a decision to pack it up together?
Well, the only retire... my retiring was because of the back. I had to retire. Because I was only just... and my prime didn't like. It happened in Bellevue, Manchester. In a wrestling contest. And I didn't feel it that bad the night of the contest, but Jim was up in the same night, my brother Jim, and I come by train to London. See, Jim, I said, my back is very, I can't move my back. And went to the Middlesex Hospital and had treatment, and no good. And I was 2 years with the crutches, couldn't walk. But I was nearly, I'm that way now. I'm to go now into the kitchen. It takes me about 2 minutes.
And when did Steve retire then, Paddy?
Steve retired in about 1948.
Who was the man he beat in the world final for the title?
What you call him, I mentioned that while ago. Lutus. Lutas, he was a Hungarian.
What about the rest? What about And of course, Steve and Tom joined the American forces.
They joined the American forces.
How long were they in them?
There was to say in American newspapers, the model soldier, that was called Steve. He was very dedicated. And, you know, he was, Steve was coaching. Steve had about, he'd be, that was his job in the army. Training for us. Get fit and put him through all that. It, Jack Shockey, you know, Jack Shockey was a world champion in boxing. And he said one day to Steve, he said, there was a big party. Jack Shockey was in the Navy and Steve in the Army. And Shockey says, well, Casey, of course, this is a, he had big hands on his big, big shoulders, what he said. It's an axe, Steve, you see. And he turned out a sprat. And Steve said, say that again. And before the, and there was about 200 people more in the audience, you know. So Steve said, open. And check hands, he says, first thing when you said. Next thing is, legs overhead, head, the top of his head in the floor. Don't ever repeat that again, he says to Sharky.
Paddy, what would you put down that there was such great talent and strength in the family and that you were all such fine men? What would you put that down to? You must be thinking, you must often sit back now and think about that.
Really speaking, I'd say that there was more on the mother's side than there was on the father's side. That was fantastic. She was. Her brothers, the Graffa Mountain, no way touch him. But his, the Graffa Mountain's father, it's my mother's father, and she had 2 or 3 other brothers. They were ahead of our dad, Mike Casey, he was really tough, he was a bouncer. Like the General Sullivan. I said that on the other side, the mountains. That's where, in both sides we come from.
I suppose the fact, Paddy, that you were born where you told us then, that you had to row and you had to work tough, that built you up, didn't I presume?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there was no transport in the day. We not to row 2 miles in a bad day. Maybe a gate of wind and teeming rain. We had to do it ourselves up to the point there. You know, nothing simple. We brought up that for anyone.
Paddy, looking back now, and you're the last of the brothers alive, and we're sitting down here on a lovely sunny Sunday inside, you look back, I presume, you have great memories, and what are your memories now looking back? It must be sad in one way, and it must be very, very, very pleasing in another way.
Well, looking back, you know, when we were the school age, you know, somewhere at 10 years old, all the family, life had better a lot. You know, people said, everybody got money today, yeah? The old age pension is about £100 a week. Some days we only spent £1. And every day a week's work.
Yeah.
A week's work for £1. Then back in that time. But there was more. I think yes, money and the family are together. And we did it. We worked so well with the fishing and all that in the rowing business. It was all natural. And then, another thing I didn't tell you, we used to keep greyhounds. And we go to first mass in the morning, Sunday morning, 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, whatever time. I'd go take the greyhounds and go to the mountains and take all the 5 slices of bread in your pocket. You know, that was the sandwiches. I'd go and stay out all day out the mountains. From 9 o'clock until 6 in the evening. Never stop walking. What made you do that first of the greyhounds? But if it went out without the greyhounds, you could never do it. It'd be too tiring then. Your mind was occupied, you see.
Paddy, if I was to ask you now, I never met your brother Steve or any of your brothers. If I was asked you to describe Steve now, how would you describe him to me?
Steve was quite an odd fellow. One thing I could say about Steve was, if there was a rough house in a pub or anything on the street, Steve and that pizza, they want it. They didn't know that, he said, they won't do nothing that way, he said, kicking, one kicking the other with the shoe, and it'd be a knife, or it'd be a penknife in his pocket, and he'd use it. I always say, never get tangled up with them type of police.
How big a part did religion play in your family when you were growing up? Were your parents very religious-minded, Paddy?
Well, from the mother's side, yeah. The rosary was said every night. You know, the rosary. Before we go to bed. And if we weren't all there, of course, at times we wouldn't be all together going to bed. She was very good. She was a very religious woman. Quite sincere too. The old man was there. He wasn't as dedicated as she was. It's that type of religion.
Where are all the boys buried now, Paddy?
Well, Jack is buried here in his name. He died here. That's the only one that's buried here, the brothers. Dan is buried in Dublin. Jim is buried in Texas. Steve is buried in Boston and Cohasset. And Tom is buried in Boston. Well, I remember, I don't know whether it's been under or here.
Where would you like to be buried?
I'd prefer here.
Looking back now, have you any regrets, Paddy?
No, I don't. Really speaking, yet. I suppose the only regret I have was, I'd say all the family were the same. But we're losing the Olympics, being disqualified before it. That was the biggest hit of all.
Do you think that you were wronged?
No, we weren't. We blame ourselves.
Yeah, true, yeah.
Steve and I blame ourselves. The old days, my dad now, he never said to you, you should do this and do that. But we expected that from him, to a bit more strict for things. He never said it. But I think the only thing I told last night, Ronnie Lenny, you know, won the gold medal in 1956 in Melbourne. And he read the book anyway. And his photograph is in the book there. And it was he gave me the Hall of Fame award in 1981 in London, Ronnie Lenny. Well, that fits for all the family. And he's great. He was a great athlete, Ronnie Lenny. And what a nice, very modest, you know. He didn't say too much how good he was. He never praised himself. That's why I liked him. Very modest type of fellow, you know. Had his pint of Guinness last night and half of the show.
And you had a great night last night here in Steam.
We had with the Blue Bowl, and there was a dinner. The committee arranged all that for us, you know. A full house. Plenty of food, plenty of drinks.
And do the families get together now, Paddy, often? Do you ever have any reunion, or have you had one all the whole, you must have a lot of, there must be a lot of relations now, all over the world.
Yeah. Well, the big thing I get now, did get, last August, with my two sons, and Steve's, the grandchildren, as James and John. John is the youngest, he's 80. He was 17, and James was 18. Partick, 47, Speed 55. The Wilder Island. But then went up to Dublin. I said, what the hell? I didn't say to him, where are you going? It's a good look, you know. The last thing I thought that would be that I'd win it. Steve's age, you know.
And did they bring the cup back to you then, specially?
This is the cup, yes. I don't know what the names are on it. The names of the crew that won it. But Steve's crew, the names are to go on it yet. This cup now has at Wexford, the All-Ireland will be held this year, in Wexford. So Steve had to take that cup there, back. But I don't think he'd have a crew this year. I don't know Steve or Patrick went wrong.
Paddy, we're after having an absolutely fabulous...
Finish up now about the two boys, Steve and Patrick. Steve beat the All-Ireland champion in 1985 at Blessington, a week ago, at a single score, 2,000 metres. I was six crews in the one race, and he beat the Irish champion. Then, in London he won, and Patrick won the Britannia Cup at Henley in the 80s, early 80s. And that club in London is called the Vicerone Club. And Steve was a member of it, and Patrick was a member. And I never won for 40, over 40 years since I won a race at Henley, that club. And so my son was in the crew, 4 men on the boat at Henley. They were getting on for 4 days. So at US, so today, so it's a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, something like that. But I got to win every day. If I won today, I'd lose tomorrow, you're out. But I won the 4 days, and it's meant to beat 4 different crews. And the final, then.
You, that gave you a great thrill.
Oh, sure. And I went over then. I wasn't there for the race. So Steve phoned from London. And St. Patrick's crew won the Britannia Cup at Henley. And, my daughter married a fellow called Tom Wright. Tom Wright, in the fish business, you know, in the market. They do all the smokes coming at London Airport. And he started jumping, and the ceiling was as high as this. And he was nearly hitting the ceiling with the jumping when Steve found that Patrick Coe won the Britannia Cup. And he said, Mr. Casey, he said, I would call him Mr. Casey, the son-in-law. You're not jumping around at all, you're not. Well, I met you. I met you enough for doing that thing more.
Paddy, travelling all over the world now in your sporting career and everything, who was the greatest sportsman you ever saw in relation to any sport? Pick out any one or two you want to.
Taking all different sports, but apart from rowing and apart from wrestling, apart from boxing. Ronnie Laney was my top man.
Now, I can't finish up without talking about a bit of Gaelic football. Because listen to these scenes we hear in Kerry. What are your memories about football in Kerry?
Well, the memories about football in Kerry, going back now and the Bomber of Waterfield, and the Spillane from Temple Now, and all the bullets, John Egan. Those years, that was the big, and that proved it too. They should have won 3 in a row or 4 in a row, but John Egan was a captain of the team, and they lost, I think, for the Wexford. The Fadera sub, I came in and went to score a goal. Jesus, and it was all, they had a board for it and all going here, they thought it was so sure of winning.
What year were you born, Paddy?
1910, February.
Listen, Paddy, I tell you the truth, it was lovely talking to you. I could have stayed talking to you all week. And I tell you, you're a wonderful man, you're a marvellous man. I tell you, we had a wonderful chat all together. And do you listen to Radio Kerry?
Oh, sure. I listen every day for a son. And it's something new. It's not too many years since I heard you. That program comes on tonight. But I can recognize your voice. You know, and I'm pretty good at that. And when I had Timmy Sullivan and Jan Vincent, but they were on and financier, my sister Mrs. Casey, as financier now, this is Timmy Sullivan, and this is Jan Vincent. You could recognize the voice right away, you know.
So, Paddy, in your 90s, you know, you're happy and contented. You had a wonderful, full and energetic life.
Oh, pretty good life. But what made the life good was the family. And Stephen, especially Steve, and my own sons, take me now, and together, as two of them, Bernadette and Patricia. One girl died, she was married to a Dublin man, Tom Wright. Tom Wright was an accountant, very nice fellow. And she died with cancer. That girl, she was 32 when she died. But I got a great kick out of her. I know I had my own two sons and I had two brothers, Steve and Jim. Jim had two boys and a girl. Steve had two boys and a girl. The girl, his son was here at the Steve Memorial. His son Mike and the dancer came out from Boston. And he could never, like, I never had to tell my two sons to row. They did it better than we did ourselves. Like Dr. Walter. They were so keen at it, you know.
A chip off the old blocks.
And she would say to me, but he says, I'll say this, buddy, he would say, oh, thank you, I'd have to say, thank him. Your two sons, he says, are none of mine, my two are not. They don't take to their own like your two sons. As Jim would say.
Well, Paddy, once again, anyway, thanks very much. It was a fabulous evening.
Thank you.